The Climate Emergency Network is a relatively small organisation, and it's only been going for a couple of years, but I think it's already demonstrated some fairly interesting results. So first of all, the Climate Emergency Network identified a source of money for some work on climate solutions modelling, $25,000 from an individual donor, and looked around to see which organisation might be a good one to take it on, because clearly our organisation didn't have the necessary skills. And so we decided, well, we offered it to Environment Victoria and they didn't want it, and we then took it to Beyond Zero Emissions and they did, and it's the rest is history, as they say. Climate Emergency Network's also just recently put $10,000 into the project that Save Climate Australia is doing on the how fast question. These sorts of projects don't come out of thin air. What they come from is a preparedness to look at what needs to be done and work out some logical steps and then just simply work through them, no matter how challenging at times those steps might be. So, for example, it's pretty clear that people are not going to be engaged if they don't think that there are solutions. So therefore, the work on a solutions platform, which Beyond Zero Emissions has done, has been vital for the morale of the movement, and that's why we backed it. It's also clear that the Beyond Zero Emissions work will fall in a hole shortly, because if people think that there is no real urgency, then why do 100% renewables and why, for goodness sake, do it by 2020? You know, why not just take that as a sort of a bit of a model and we can work incrementally towards it over the next 50 years? So that's why the Climate Emergency Network has put in the money into Save Climate Australia to develop a completely bulletproof, profound case for why we have to move fast, but based on the science, and therefore I can't tell you precisely how fast we have to move because the project hasn't finished yet. But we certainly have a gut feeling that it's very fast. So what we did is we've been actively involved in the Transition Decade Alliance, because we took a management punt that if you think you're going to have to move fast, then why not act on it? Because if you're wrong, it doesn't matter, and if you're right, then at least you got in when you needed to do it. So we've been assuming that we have something like a decade, might be a bit longer, might be less, to actually make a massive transition in society. If we are going to do that physical change in a very short time, then it's also quite clear we can't spend the whole time just simply talking about it and activating towards it. It actually has to happen within the decade, and you have to have enough time to get the windmills and the concentrating solar thermal power stations up and fixing the public transport and changing the road systems and rebuilding the buildings and retrofitting the houses and, you know, everything that needs to be done, changing agriculture, working right through the whole system. That's a very good decade or so's worth of work. So the question is, how do you actually make that happen? And it's perfectly clear at the moment that one of the biggest blockages is that people don't think it's possible. Not because it's not technically possible. We thought that it wasn't technically possible, and now there's documentation around to show that it is technically possible, at least in the stationary energy area. And I would anticipate that as the further reports come out from BZE, they'll demonstrate that the rest of the technical task is possible. But the crucial thing at the moment is that we believe that we can't do it politically. The society won't change, we can't change, there's a million reasons why it can't happen. So that's now where some of the work of the Climate Emergency Network is now moving. So we've just begun efforts to develop a campaign around the idea of actually creating a community demand for the rebuilding of Australia's economy by 2020. So it's obviously the same sort of thing as BZE is talking about, but it's just the meme of what we're talking about is rebuilding the entire economy right across the board, and that'll create the political space in which the BZE type work can have its effect. So we have a small problem though. If we're going to do this in 10 years or, you know, we'll probably miss our deadlines. I usually do miss my deadlines, but even if it's sort of 10 years plus a little bit, even 20 years. But anyway, if it's a reasonably short time, I mean, no, the world record for rebuilding economies in quite sort of semi-normal times was South Korea, where they rebuilt from being basically an agricultural society to being one of the world-leading industrial countries, and they took 20 years to do that. They had a dictatorship. I don't think we should be adopting that strategy. So we've got a special question of how do you do it in a democracy and keep your democracy in the process of doing it. So, okay, we've got to invent something that the South Koreans didn't invent, but that's all right, let's just try and do it. But the point, though, is that if we're going to do that, we have to do it in a particular time frame. What I've noticed with quite a few of the groups that are operating in the climate area is that they'll often say something like, whoa, you've got really big aspirations. That means it's a long-term program. And so what they do is they get really stroppy when we try to actually do things in the here and now that impact on the immediate campaigns. Because the assumption is that we should politely keep out of the way and we should be building up something that'll come in, say, in 10 years' time, rather than something that's going to be part of the politics of today and tomorrow. And I think that that's going to be one of the challenges. But once we start to focus on the politics of today and tomorrow, what we find is that Australia is going conservative at a fair clip at the moment. And so, therefore, I think we're going to have to start to invent new strategies for which I don't think we have solutions at the moment, but that doesn't worry me. It's just simply another problem we're going to have to work out. I think what we have to do is to actually work out how you deliver radical change at a time when people think they're conservative. Right? So, how do you do that? Now, one of the things that makes me more optimistic than I've been for a while is that whereas 20 or 30 years ago, the environmental problems in those days were things which you had to be a fairly sensitive person to become very agitated about them, because they didn't really threaten your life or your kids' lives or whatever. They might have if it was a high pollution problem in a particular locality, but generally for most people in an affluent country like Australia, environmentalism was something you added onto everything else you were worried about. The big difference, and so therefore it's not surprising that not everybody got involved and that a lot of people would fight back against involvement. But I think that at this stage that the threat from climate change is so severe, you know, and anyway, we know it's severe, but it is so severe that it means that any person who's actually rational, doesn't matter what their politics are, if they're actually rationally interested in themselves or their family, their friends, if they're old and they want to die quickly, that's all right. But if they're worried about anything where a little bit of further time and a little bit of wider concern is involved, then you simply can't ignore climate change. So therefore, my feeling at the moment is, if we have a situation where society is polarising around conservatives against, you know, lefties in favour, then that is because we have failed to message the issue. Because it's ridiculous to say that it's not relevant to the Conservatives. Okay? The next thing is that once people start to look at the issues, they will start to change how they do things. So, for example, most people say that a Conservative in the sort of the traditional sense is somebody who doesn't like change that much. They don't like sudden leaps and bounds and rushing into new ways of being. They like how things are, thank you very much, and they'd like to just keep that going. But one of the funny things is that those same Conservatives are just as likely to be the people who are about to throw themselves across the, you know, into a war or something. And so what happens is that it's almost like human beings, or maybe it's, I don't know whether it's across the board, but certainly some human beings, and there's plenty of them in the Conservative side, have two modes of operation. Normal, mainstream, you know, business as usual, and then crisis mode. If it's a flood, fire, famine, whatever, or even better still, if it's a threat from some other force outside that you can, you know, go out and sort of smash to pieces, then that's a great thing. But the thing is, what I'm saying is that to say that people can't cope with change is complete and utter bullshit. It's a question of what mode are they in when they face a question. How are they thinking about that problem? Okay, so I think that we can find a way to communicate with people using conservative framing. So it's the opposite of the George Lakoff thing where you wanted a radical program in a sense of being part of the liberal agenda, sorry, American liberal as in left-wing agenda, where you had to find a way of framing that to get it out of the conservative frames which you were being thrown at. Interestingly enough, I don't know whether people have been watching Beyond Zero Emissions approach carefully or not, but they deliberately try to find ways of taking what is essentially, a, you know, we would call a radical program and presenting it in a conservative framing, quite deliberately, so it gets past all the sort of the usual rejection, you know, and can you actually get through to people? So, I'm probably just about run out of time. 2 minutes. Okay. I think that we actually can do this. I think it is possible, because the issue is now so big and so important and so scary, I think that it is just simply a matter of working out how we can actually engage our framing and do it. But I have to say, if we've got a tight time frame and a huge thing to do, you simply cannot do that if you refuse to look at the mechanics, the logistics of that problem. If you refuse to recognise the urgency and the scale, then you will come up with strategies that simply don't deal with urgency and scale, and therefore they will fail. Flip side, how do I know that an alternative approach will work? I don't, of course. How can I? We've never done this before. How could I possibly know that? But the thing is, the question to ask ourselves, is it worth trying? And I would have thought the answer to that's pretty plain and straightforward. Of course it's worth trying. So what we have to do is to work out how to be... What are conservatives like? They like people who are competent. They like people who listen to them. Well, doesn't anybody? They like people who, they provide security. They're working on security issues. They provide opportunity. There's a whole lot of things. I think that we can engage with this issue, even on an incredible short time frame, on a huge scale of change, and we can flip it around, and I think we can get the majority of Australians on side. I think we've got two jobs to do. I think we've got one job is to mobilise our people, bearing in mind that our people now are actually people traditionally who would be considered progressive politically, in our terms, and then there would be people we would consider probably conservative. So our team now should be thought of as having both those sets of people involved, and we don't water down the issue. I'll come back to that in the 2 seconds I've got left. And if we simply build our movement and it gets bigger and bigger, and if we take up Clive's suggestions about, you know, the direct action in the way he suggested, there's a fair chance that the people who don't like what we're doing will feel like the end of the world has come for them in a very, very visceral sense. And so they'll fight back, and all they have to do is block us. They don't actually have to do anything because they've got control of the system. They just have to block. And because we've got to do something in 10 or 15 years, they can just sit around blocking us for the next 10 or 15 years without any trouble at all. So we have to get our movement, which will be the radicals plus the caring conservatives, together. And then the other thing we have to do is we have to actually work at helping the Tea Party Maddies to demobilise. So my first suggestion is that anybody who's got a red or a black flag, every time there's a demonstration by the Tea Party mob, they should go and join it, and they should take their flag, and they should argue against the carbon tax. So they should be there with very big red flags and very big black flags, and preferably red and black clothes. And every time that they have these Tea Party people have a demo, they should say, yes, we hate a carbon tax, we want direct investment, government investment. So we probably need to try and encourage some people who are on the conservative side of politics to form a smaller Liberal Party, who can campaign for the next 3 years to show that what Tony Abbott is doing is not liberalism, and that he would destroy this country, he and his ilk would destroy this country, and no decent Liberal, no decent Conservative would ever vote for them.